You gloated too much over George's.
I gloated too much. Okay, outposters, do you hear me now? Now that it's showing that I have lines and stuff coming, going green, yellow, red, please let me know. Let me know that you hear me now. Joe, John, you do, I'll wait for your chat. Tell me that that my audio is working now. Can you tell yet? Is it caught up? Can hear Sean, no, but not George Lucas. I'm not George Lucas. I am drunken Yoda. So still nothing? That doesn't make sense.
No, not yet, man.
It says it's streaming me out. So it finally caught up.
Yeah, it caught up.
It's that 70 second delay because of my filthy mouth. So we're gonna start all over. Take two.
Hey, I know technology.
So to sum up, he said he believes this is the best of the MCU movies.
I think it is the best of the MCU movies.
And it's basically an it turns out it's an origin story, and it puts Peter Parker where you expect Peter Parker to be based on his comic book type. You know, so
yes. So I said that he ends up in a place where you would expect Peter Parker to be, in a shitty apartment with no money and a lot of guilt. And tragedy. Let's heap a little tragedy on him too, because that's Spider-Man, right?
You gotta have it.
He fights because he feels guilty.
Yeah.
And he feels responsible if he isn't there. And what I said was is that whether it was through serendipity or on purpose, the three Spider-Man movies become an origin story I didn't even know I wanted. And I'm kind of impressed, because a lot of people that, you know, they want Spider-Man to be in that position where he ends up. So if that's something you've been unhappy about, you should be happy now. But I also feel like that within the confines of the MCU, how Peter Parker ended up in things and how he got the suits, it kind of made sense to me. It didn't bother me, because this is it felt natural and organic within this world. You know, Peter Parker's may have taken a different turn when you have a Tony Stark that finds him and you have these situations. You know, the world that they create should not be beholden to what we think the comic book should be, if it doesn't make any sense.
Right.
But the kicker is that it also makes perfect sense for him to be where he is now, to be where we think Peter Parker should be, because of the way things have organically, through stories, have moved forward. And that, to me, is damn impressive. So you asked where would I put this as far as all the MCU movies? I said I think I'd put it at the top, and I'll admit to some recency bias, but I've been going through it all in my mind, the things that they set up and paid off so well, and like I said, it's like, well, we used to have we made this universe where we could have all these separate movies, and then we bring them all together in their own, and then they guest star in each other's movies, all these different heroes. It's never been done before. And then Feige says, well, hold my beer, I'm gonna bring in Tobey fucking Maguire.
Yeah.
I'm gonna bring in Doc Ock from 20 years ago. I'm gonna blow your minds. You know, you know, the next one they're going to be bringing in like Knight Rider and Airwolf. They'll be doing all kinds of shit. I mean, because where else are you going to go? You know, it's the Super Friends. It's Gleek. Oh no!
I've seen some what's his name from the Fantastic Four cartoon where they couldn't have the Human Torch, so they have
Herbie robot. The robot.
Herbie. Yeah, but I heard somebody on the Last Movie Outpost comments was complaining about the multiverse. Oh, that it's a lazy writing tool, and you know, maybe, I don't know, but you know, that the multiverse has been established in the the 616, which is the comic book universe.
DC has been the multiverse constantly. What's really hilarious about it is that Marvel again said, "Hold my beer, DC. Watch us do it way better than you ever have."
Yeah, but it's such a staple of the comic books that I don't understand the offense of that. It's like, oh, what? You know, it's like, man, I honestly kind of wanted I think it to happen sooner. You know?
I think that if misused, the multiverse can be like time travel, like a big reset button to get you out of the stupid writing mistakes you've made. It's a cheap and lazy way to fix things. That's not what happened here.
Yeah.
That's not at all what happened here. So, in essence, one thing I liked, if you remember Spider-Man Homecoming, the post-credit scene was May figuring out that he was Spider-Man.
Yeah, walks in on him or something.
Yeah. How was that resolved? Apparently off camera, because when we get to Far From Home, it's like, yeah, it's no big deal. She's wiping smuts off of his suit to make sure everything's okay. You know, she's totally good with all of it. So fine. This one, at the end of that movie, they ended it with J. Jonah Jameson says, "That's right, Peter Parker is Spider-Man," and they pick up like that exact scene.
No kidding.
No delay. We pick up with him going, "What the fuck?" right there. Except they put a horn honk right before right as he says F word, which was I thought was fine.
You already said fuck. You don't have to say F word now and censor yourself after you've already.
No, I'm just saying that that's what they did. I don't censor anything. Fuck that shit.
So here's a question: how is it that the different universe Spider-Man all look different? But JJJ still is the same guy.
Well, he's bald. He's bald. Well, where before he has the flat top, so you could. I don't know.
We'll go with.
Maybe
that.
Some of them do look the same, and some of them do look different. I don't know. There's a lot of logic questions that will break your brain. But let's go through the plot a little bit. I'll explain it out a bit. Tell you what I liked as we went through. So one, MJ. Zendaya is at her best in this movie. Before, she was unattainable girlfriend, love interest.
Too cool for school. Type.
Yeah, and before that, she wasn't even really... She was kind of a side character that was just making snarky comments. I never disliked her like some people did, but that doesn't mean that she wasn't much better in this movie than before. She's a part of the gang. She's trying to help Peter. She's a good girlfriend. She's willing to tell Peter he's doing dumb things, but she's also willing to support him as much as possible. So after everybody finds out who he is, he gets off from the legal problems because of Mysterio created. For whatever reason, there's just not enough there to implicate him. And he has a very good lawyer, which turns out to be Matt Murdock from the Netflix Daredevil series. Charlie Cox, I think.
Yeah, Charlie Cox.
And he's great. And he has a little moment. Somebody throws a brick through their window, you know. Mysterio is right, you know. And he catches it. The blind guy catches it. He's like,
So there's no coyness about it. He's definitely the same.
He's definitely the same guy. He's definitely Daredevil. Yeah. He goes, "How'd you do that?" He goes, "I'm a really good lawyer." It's a good line. So they end up in a apartment that Happy has. Happy is playing the sad sack jilted lover because Marissa Tomei dumped him. Aunt May dumped him. Aunt May dumped Happy Hogan. Only in the MCU could that happen. So, and I don't blame him. I mean, you know, if I got dumped by Marissa Tomei, I'd be pretty much of a sad sack for a while, too. So they end up at this apartment, and they are waiting to get their MIT or their colleges, and every college rejects the three of them because of what Parker has gone through. They get nothing but rejection letters. So he goes to Doctor Strange to get him to cast a spell to get everybody to forget Spider-Man. So that's when you've seen from the trailers when he comes in and everything is covered with snow. And he said, why is everything covered with snow? It's like, well, you know those portals that Doctor Strange could go through to the different places in the world? They showed it in the first movie. Apparently somebody left one of those open and a blizzard came through. Ha ha, very funny. So they're shoveling it, you know, like manually. I'm like, can't you just magic this shit away? I don't understand. Yeah. Why is this a problem? Oh, because it's funny. It's not that funny, but okay. So Strange wants to help him. And there's a change from the trailer where Wong says, by the way, Wong is the Sorcerer Supreme now. Apparently, on a technicality, if you get blipped away for 5 years, they got to have somebody step in. So Wong is now the boss.
So some of the internet discussion on that before the movie come out, apparently, you know, they made it into some kind of bigger deal.
You know? Yeah, it was humorous.
Yeah,
maybe something that Strange has to deal with or get back with the Multiverse of Madness thing.
Yeah, no doubt. It's
probably
Chekhov's gun there that we'll see pop up later on.
Yeah, but for now, this was just a gag. So Wong orders him in the trailer, do not cast that spell. Don't mess with me. It's a bad spell. And they show Strange just basically lying to him, saying, okay, I won't. And then as soon as he leaves, he doesn't. In the movie, Wong says, you know, if you do this, you know, there's a lot of bad things that can happen with that. He's like, look, hasn't the kid been through enough? I think we, you know, he's helped save the world. This is a really bad thing. Why don't we help him out? And Wong says, fine, just leave me out of it. And he walks out. So it's not quite as... I don't know why the change. I guess it makes Strange look less of a lying, you know, backstabber than, or maybe puts him in less trouble, since Wong is like not really saying no. He's just saying, I'm out, you know.
Yeah.
So fine, they go down, do the spell. Now, why they didn't plan this a little bit more, saying, okay, who do you want to know and who do you not, you know? And I know a lot of people say, why didn't he just tell people afterwards? It's like, it's after seeing how the spell works, you can kind of understand why that would get pretty damn difficult, because it's more than just not knowing you're Spider-Man. It's not knowing you at all.
Yeah, you can't walk up to a stranger and be like, hey, man, by the way, I'm this superhero.
We were going to get married.
Sure you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's telling Doctor Strange, oh, keep this person, don't do this person. And he's fucking up the spell while he's casting it. Like I said, this is a problem. They should have just planned it out. But, you know, the movie needs to happen.
Yeah.
So he takes the spell, which is in a pause state, I guess, and he sticks it in a Dungeons and Dragons dice, a big crystal hexagon thing, and just floats around in there. But doing this actually, because I don't know why memory spells cause you to open up portals to reality, but apparently that's a thing. So
I'll try to remember that.
I had no idea those two things would be so related, but there you go. So what they say is that people who knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man from other realities leaked into this one. Not everybody. That's why you don't see Gwen Stacy or Mary Jane, but you do see Doc Ock, you see Norman Osborn, you see Sandman. And then from Garfield's universe, you see Electro, Jamie Foxx, and the Lizard, Riz Ifan. So they have to clean that up, and And Peter did all this to try to, you know, get MJ. He was doing it for more altruistic reasons than just my life is shit. It was because Ned and MJ couldn't get into college either, and he felt really responsible for that. So it was a little bit more altruistic than it came across in the trailer. But then after he got done, it's like, well, what did the MIT say when you called them? And he's like, called them? It's like, wait a minute, let me get this straight. You got one rejection letter, and instead of calling them to plead your case, you came in here to ask me to brainwash the entire fucking planet? And the next scene is just them slamming the door and him standing on the street going, well, when you put it like that.
So wait, Doctor Strange didn't forget that he was Peter Parker, though, after casting the spell.
Well, nobody forgot at that point. The spell was botched.
Oh,
So this didn't happen yet, okay? I said the spell is in pause mode.
Okay.
Keep that in mind. So then he goes to get the bad guys, and Strange... well, at first he goes to plead his case, and he is successful. But he's pleading his case to the lady on the bridge. She had just left a party or something. So he's pleading it with her on the bridge. And that's when Doc Ock shows up and almost kills her. He saves her. And, of course, she's like, don't you worry. We're going to get you into MIT. You're a hero. And so he's able to use his nano suit. Like, at first, Doc Ock uses his arms and grabs some of his suit. And then the nanites go all over the arms.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, man, I've got... You know, now my arms are super powerful now. And Peter does some shit, does Bluetooth, and then he just takes control of the arms. and Malia's like, you listen to me. He's like, no, they don't. Not anymore. Get your ass over into... And so Strange realizes what's happening, so he equips Spider-Man with a portal gun that when he hits one of these guys, it immediately sends him to... Doctor Strange's basement, underneath the Sanctum Sanctorum, sends him to his laundry room. That's where he spent a lot of these magic cells. And through, so he finds Sandman, he finds, you know, all these guys, and
is him fighting with the alternate villains, does this take up a major part of the movie?
Not as much as you might think. Like Norman Osborn, he comes in and he ends up in an alley, and the mask is sitting there like it did in the movie. It's sitting there on a dumpster. He's trying to cover up the glider, you know, and trying to figure out he's himself again, but he's hearing the goblin going, "You're weak," doing all that stuff. And he goes, and he smashes the mask, and he just runs off. He's like, he can't find Oscorp. Somebody's living in his house, you know. And he ends up at a place where Aunt May is because there's a bunch of Spider-Man stuff on there, and he thinks Spider-Man's the only guy that can help me at this point, not realizing that he's in a different universe. So he's actually the most sympathetic at that point. So Peter takes them all to the, he's got them depowered enough and he's got them under control. So he takes them to their condo where he has one of those Stark magic make anything you fucking need machines, you know? And he says, we can help fix you guys. So, because if we send you back and you're going to go back and die and he goes, I can't just set these guys back just to die if we can help them, which I thought was really cool. I was like, you know, this is a sincere moment that is a little missing. And see, I mean, the superhero movies, they're killing everybody everywhere now.
Yeah.
You know, and it used to be that was a big deal. Like, you remember Batman, that was his one rule. He wouldn't kill anybody. He wouldn't even kill the Joker, right? But in the MCU, a lot of people get killed. Right.
Yeah, I've always thought that Captain America wasted a whole lot of bad guys to not even carry a gun, even though, you know, Bucky's blazing away.
Yeah.
Nobody seems to mind that.
Yeah, Iron Man's just wasting Arabs everywhere. You know? So, you're racist. And So it's fine. He's like going, no, I want to save these guys. I want to send them back so maybe, you know, they don't have to die at those universes' Spider-Man's hands. So, of course, it backfires like shit on him. He is able to fix the inhibitor chip for Octopus, and Octopus comes on his side. Sandman is kind of like, I just want to go back home.
Yeah, he never was a real villain type in those movies, though. You know, he's
he does like when things go bad, he's like, all right, screw you, Parker. I'm gonna go with the villains now. Whatever gets me home, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
So because he just always gets back to his daughter. So when things go really bad and Norman loses his mind again, he ends up killing Aunt May.
Mm.
And
spoiler.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you not aware that that's where we were going? As I've explained you plot detail by plot detail up into the... Now you're yelling spoiler. Whatever. So, yeah, he kills Aunt May. And it's a really touching moment. Because at first you think, well, maybe she's not dead. Maybe she just got knocked on her butt. And then, you know, she's got the stab wound, the loss of blood, and she ends up falling over. She doesn't even realize that she's dying. Thinks she's going to be okay. Thinks it's just the wind's knocked out of her. But she does give Peter the correctly quoted line of, with great power must also come great responsibility. They always forget that must also part of it, which is puts a little bit of pressure on it. It's not just like you're bestowed responsibility. You have to take the responsibility with the power that you've been granted.
Are you sure it wasn't just a, you know, a woman takes more words to say something that could be said in less moment?
That's possible. It's really well done. It's a line that is used to death, and you expect it coming from Uncle Ben. So when she gives the line just before she's the one that dies, that's when the whole thing comes into focus. It's like, you don't know what happened to Uncle Ben exactly. You know something did. But Peter, up until this point, has had it reasonably easy, as easy as you can have it in the MCU, as compared to his counterparts and what you expect. He's had these awesome suits. He's got a girl that he likes. He's got a best friend that they both know is his secret. He goes to a kick-ass school. You know, they don't have tons of money, but they are friends with a multi-billionaire now who helps them out quite a bit. I mean, he hasn't had that. And now this is the moment, right? This is the moment where it all comes together, where everything has been building to that. As far as his origin story and him really having some loss that we've seen on screen, and you didn't see it coming because you don't think of it as Aunt May. You always believe it's Uncle Ben.
Yeah, Aunt May never dies.
Aunt May never dies, except she died here, and I thought it was kind of brilliant, really, because it really, that's how you subvert expectations without destroying the property. Yeah. But you're still being respectful and honest to the character. But you're doing it in a way that you weren't expecting. And I gotta say, and that's hard to do. So then he's run off. He's just trying to cope with it all, right? And they can't find him. Now, I did forget a piece. When he decides to make the decision to help the villains, and he has to fight Doctor Strange in the mirror universe or in the mirror dimension to get this box away from him, because Strange is like, I'm just sending them back. I don't give a fuck. I don't care if they die. Peter has to fight him. He leaves him in that universe. He takes his sling ring from him. So he's stuck there for the time being. Which is just a way to get him off to the side so they can do their thing without him effing things up. That Strange's part in this was a little weak. He didn't have very much to do. He was a plot device to keep things moving and then to be moved off until we need him again. Which is okay. I mean, it's not the end of the world. It's just there's a lot of stuff going on here, and it is.
Yeah, you know, it's like I always say, you know, anybody that's read comics for any amount of time, none of this stuff should really, you know, bother them. If you know, because like we're used to accepting the most absurd things in the comic book, so I.
Exactly. So Peter is, you know, Aunt May's dead. He's run off for the moment, understandably so. MJ and Ned are trying to figure out, you know, what to do, and they're thinking, okay, well, maybe I'm they got the box. And she's like, I may have to hit the box. It's like, we need to get Peter. We need to find him before we do anything. You know, May didn't want this. We still have a chance. So it turns out Ned has some magic. They kind of hint at it a little earlier. It's a little weak, but it's fine. And he is able to get the sling ring going. So he says, where, you know, I want to find Peter. I want to find Peter. And it opens up a portal. And they see him in the alley. And they yell, Peter, Peter. And when he runs, of course, I knew it the minute I saw him, but he runs in and it's Garfield. And he pulls off his mask and it's Garfield. Big applause in the audience. Big, oh, you know. That's when it's the most fun, when you're watching it with the audience, because people are like, it was a well-kept secret, other than I knew, and I think I said this in one of our streams, there was no effing way they were bringing in all the villains and not bringing in the two Spider-Men. Yeah. There was no way that was happening. People would have rioted and burned down Disney. There was no way that wasn't happening.
But, you know, for normies, that was probably a big surprise.
It was, and that's fine.
I envy them for being surprised in the face.
And then so Ned is like, and so he does some comedic beats in there, trying to, you know, proving that he's Spider-Man, and they're kind of like, whoa, this is weird. So he's like, okay, well, this isn't the one I want. So they Ned tries again, and this time a more civilian dressed Tobey Maguire comes out. And he's like, oh, this is just some guy. And, of course, the theater's going, ah! Losing their shit. And that was one thing I really liked, because they did not treat any of this. You know, for these people in this universe, they don't know any of this. Right. You know, they don't. And I mentioned it in my review, because if you remember Star Trek Into Darkness, where Benedict Cumberbatch, who was also in this movie, goes, my name is Khan. And, you know, like, it was supposed to be a big, huge moment. And, of course, the Kirk of that era go like, yeah, and?
Okay, so.
But you know, they never do that in this movie, you know. And so then those two Spider-Men help the MCU Spider-Man, figure things out and help support him. And they have some neat little, you know, I wouldn't say comedic talks, but they go into a little depth, you know. But I'll tell you, I mean, Maguire comes in and he plays kind of the, you know, he's clearly older. He's not, you know, he's in his 40s and he's playing.
So is this an aged in real time Spider-Man, basically?
For him, yes. For the villains, no. And I have some questions about that. But yes, Spider-Man comes in, or Toby comes in, and Garfield comes in, and they play different roles, and it really works right. For Toby, he's a guy who is kind of a little bit more at peace, has been around the block a little bit more, and has some words of wisdom to help. And kind of, you know, he understands his role and what it is, and he's trying to make the best of his life. There's a hint that he's still with MJ, and they're making it work. So you kind of hear a little bit of that. And he talks about how his best friend, you know, tried to kill him and that kind of stuff, and what he could have done differently and things like that. And then Garfield, on the other hand, Garfield is you know, the last we saw him was right after Gwen, you know, hit the ground like a sack of wet cement. And he says he went into a darker place and then he stopped pulling his punches. Kind of a little bit bitter and that sort of thing. So there is a moment where MJ falls from a big height and our Peter tries to save the MCU Peter tries to save him, But the goblin hits him, and then Garfield gets the chance to save her. And here's the amazing thing. No pun intended. That moment, because Garfield sells it perfectly. When he asks, is she okay? She says, yeah, I'm good, thank you. And his face melts into both grief and relief.
Yeah.
Or closure all at the same time. He's a good actor. So
yeah, he's a pretty good actor.
And he gets this moment that had more weight and substance, even though it depends on you seeing the other movie. Amazing Spider-Man 2 and knowing what happened in there. I could give two shits when she died in that movie. I mean, it was so telegraphed, it was so bad. And yet I really felt for him in this as the character.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're doing something so right here that this is making me go, you know, getting a little misty here for a movie I didn't give a shit about or didn't give a shit what happened at the time. I'm like, these guys, they're doing something really brilliant here to kind of give that character, and good for Garfield, you know? He gets it. I know he loved playing Spider-Man, and he didn't get much of a... The writers really did him dirty.
Yeah.
And so...
He was fine. It was not his fault on those movies, you know? Yeah, he was not the problem in those movies.
I disagree with... Like, he was a little too cool as Peter.
Yeah, I agree with that, it was a slightly different take, but he was not like the weak link as far as like his acting ability or anything.
In fact, him and Emma Stone, I mean, they were the best part of that movie, just watching them interact and the chemistry they had. They were a lot of fun.
Does Toby suit up?
They all three suit up. Okay. They all have the big battle at the end, and then they all save each one of the villains. They make their magic, you know, whatever they have to. The Stark magic machine does its job, and they are able. Now they get Otto at the beginning. They get him at the beginning, and they give him an inhibitor chip, and suddenly they're out of his brain, and he becomes the guy he was before he even put the suit on.
Yeah, because he was a good guy before. Yeah. He was a normal, decent person.
He actually ends up there helping them.
Mm.
Sandman gets desanded. He becomes human again.
Like depowered permanently.
Yeah. They pull all the energy out of Jamie Foxx. And Jamie Foxx doesn't want to go. He's like, this is the power. Like he gets a hold of a arc reactor. And to him, that's like electric crack, you know. He's like, whoa, what is this?
And he's
they don't have this shit at my place.
And he's a legit nut before he gains his powers in those movies anyway. This is not a...
But they depower him, and once he becomes kind of fully human again, he kind of... They all have their little bit of redemption moments. But the big one was Doc Ock and Norman Osborn. Now, Osborn turns out to be the true villain in this.
Of course.
Or the Green Goblin. And since he smashed the mask and he's got kind of a hood, kind of a cloak and stuff on. It's not exactly the Green Goblin or the Hobgoblin outfit, but it's kind of echoes of it. It looks so much better than that shit outfit from the 2002, that mask, the Power Rangers Goblin. He still has the armor on, but it's just these little changes and accents. And let Willem Dafoe be Willem Dafoe, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't need... So is Electro... He looks a little different in it too, right?
He does.
His costume tweaked and stuff?
He's not blue anymore.
Yeah.
He's now he doesn't have a comb. He's handsome Jamie Foxx. And I'd say, you know, dude, you got an upgrade no matter how you look at this. So
yeah.
So it turns out that the spell that was put on pause, the only way to fix all this, because the multiverse is breaking open and more are coming in, the only way to fix all this is just to make everybody forget that Peter Parker was Spider-Man. Or that Peter Parker even exists, apparently. I'm not clear on that. But that's what ends up happening. And then once he does that, then everybody goes back to their universes. Everything closes up. But nobody on Earth remembers him.
Yeah, they just...
Sparkly white light, you know.
Man.
So they... they do a good job, and gets a shitty apartment. He's not going to go to college, but his friends are. And he sews himself up a truly as accurate a Spider-Man costume as there has been so far. Mm. Just made a Lycra, and it just looks perfect. And
why does he give up the Stark suit?
Well, that's a question I have. I have many questions.
Mm.
So they,
maybe it's a self, you know, flagellation punishment sort of thing, you know.
Well, I don't think so. Okay. So let's take a there's a lot of neat things that go on in this, and there's a lot of things I like. There's a moment where he has the box that and Strange is trying to get the box from him, and he pulls him down and he knocks his astral form out of his body.
Yeah.
And so he tries to grab the box, but the body keeps doing this, dodging him. And he's like, "How are you doing this? You're not supposed to be able to do this." And his astral form is still away from his body. He's like, "I have no idea." But if you look very closely, the classic spider lines, they're kind of transparent and a little smoky, but the classic spider sense lines are coming out of his head in his astral form. I was like,
that's one thing.
That's cool. Yeah,
that's one thing I never is that the Spidey sense never did seem to be a big thing in the MCU movies.
He has the tingle. They talk about it.
Yeah, not as pronounced as it is, like where he, you know, they really emphasize it at Tobey Maguire, you know what I mean? In the first three, like you see, his camera zooms in and then, you know, there's. It's very explicit, you know what I mean? They never really kind of did that. I'm not complaining or anything. I just...
So here's my questions. Buckle up. We're told that only people who knew Peter Parker was Spider-Man might have gotten sucked in. So why is Electro there? Because he didn't know.
Mm.
Secondly, the villains come... not only from different universes, but from different time periods. Because when Osborn shows up, Otto says, "Osborn, you're dead. What are you doing here?" And Sandman goes, "You both are dead. What are both of you doing here?" So they must have came from three different time periods, right? And we know from Loki that... time branching and stuff is going on. So if they come from three different timelines, then do they get sent back to the time they came from, which was clearly they came from the different times that they were in? And if he sends Osborn back now cured and he doesn't cause any problems, does that mean he stops Otto from maybe, you know, like he tells Otto, maybe put a surge suppressor on that thing so you don't blow up your inhibitor chip, because I'm a bit of a scientist myself. If you remember Spider-Man 2, the reason Otto got all the funding was from Harry, but Harry doesn't know jack shit about science. If Osborn had been there to support him and do all that, maybe Otto wouldn't have had that happen to him. Or maybe the thing wouldn't have gone wrong. So does that change the timeline? But if they send Otto back to where he was, is it three different timelines now? One for Sandman, one for Otto, and one for Osborn.
I'd say that's probably... I mean, that's as close as you're going to get to an explanation, because, you know, the Loki timeline split thing is... That's going to be their new hand wave explanation for anything.
Yeah, know? I mean, I know Sandman probably goes back to the way things were, but he's now cured. But would that change for him with the other two villains going back? I mean... his stuff was kind of unrelated, but, you know, a butterfly flaps his wings and all, right? So,
why didn't Harry get sucked into it too? I wonder,
because they couldn't afford Franco.
Well, he's in the process of being canceled right now for.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Well, then you say the Lizard goes back, but now the Lizard is cured before he could do all his stuff. Does that mean Captain Stacy lives? If Captain Stacy lives in that timeline, then maybe Gwen doesn't die because of, you know, different changes that happen, right?
I would say it's a case where they go back to alternate timelines, even from the ones that.
So they're like five different Tobey Maguire. Four different Tobey Maguire universes and three different Andrew Garfield universes.
Yeah, there might be infinite. You know, there's the Tobey Maguire, and then they might split off and have, you know, who knows how many different timelines from that, and for each one. So it's conceivable that that wasn't the Doc Ock that he knew. You know, it's like, well, I saved him, but oh, I'm going back to my original timeline. But the one that got pulled over in this other, you know.
But does that mean the original timeline where they all died also continues?
Yeah, they just go back to normal in that and carry on.
Right. But then these three new timelines show up where they're cured.
Yeah, they just pop back up, and then the Tobey Maguire in that universe is like, oh, I'm glad to see you came to your senses, you know, at whatever point in the story. So.
Okay, so, all right. And the same with Lizard and Electro, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe Gwen doesn't die in either of those now.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, it's like the kind of explaining the Endgame, you know. It's like, well, you go back to this point, but a new one started no matter what. So
then you asked, what about his suit and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody loses their memory of Peter Parker. Now, when Peter goes back to school, the two teachers and the coach, they're standing in front of this thing they've built where it has Peter's picture and next to Spider-Man. It's like a shrine to a hero. You know what I'm saying? So does all the when everybody forgets, does all the physical evidence just disappear? Does that shrine just disappear? And if that's the case,
yeah, people are going to come into school the next day and go like, what the hell is this thing?
I mean, they appear to forget that Peter Parker even exists, so they don't know who this is. I mean, like, what about all that digital footage that Mysterio had? I know J. Jonah Jameson had access to it all.
Yeah.
Does that all get removed?
I would say so.
What happened to his suits? Why did they disappear?
Probably. I would say it's very much like the you know, the one more day storyline. Like anything, it's not just a brainwash. It's a tidying up, and you know, very convenient.
And then and why does a magic wizard need to shovel snow?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
So the post credit scene is Tom Hardy as Venom sitting in a bar in Mexico, learning about all the bullshit that's happened in the MCU so far, you know? Aliens with rocks snapping and people blipping away and all this kind of stuff. Why is he there? He doesn't know Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He's got to... And then at the end, he just blips back to the Sony-verse, leaving a little piece of Venom behind. So, you know, that's a setup moment. I get that. But why was he there in the first place? And if he goes back to the Sonyverse, I believe that's where Morbius is in the Morbius trailer. Morbius is part of the Sonyverse. So he's going to be in there. Except in the trailer for the Morbius, it has Michael Keaton as Adrian Toomes in the trailer.
I don't know. That'll be,
I don't understand.
I'm sure that'll be explained as like, well, the spell wasn't perfect. Yeah. The Venom did not know.
He didn't know anything about there. There was no Spider-Man in his universe.
Well, the Venom and Tobey Maguire knew that he was.
That's the Venom with Tobey Grace.
Right, but the symbiote knows.
The symbiote is not in that universe. He's a different universe.
Yeah.
If anybody's please help me because I got a migraine trying to go through all this.
I don't know, man. That right there's that's some Sony executive meddling on that. It's like, all right, Marvel, you want to do this? We'll get these other guys, but you got to.
This was a way to get Venom into the MCU without getting Venom into the MCU. Yeah. So Sony can still continue to have their Sonyverse with all their Spider-Man villains and anti-heroes, everybody but Spider-Man, apparently.
Yeah.
But the Morbius thing is confusing as hell to me. If that's, because they kind of said, okay, so Venom goes back to the Sonyverse. And I'm pretty certain that Morbius is part of the Sonyverse. He's not a part of the MCU. But then why is Michael Keaton in there as Adrian Toomes?
Well, if you were, maybe there's an Adrian Toomes in the Sonyverse.
Oh, shut up.
Hey, man.
I want better. I expect better out of you.
I'm trying to work with me here, you know. I'm trying to help you sleep tonight.
Maybe it's a duplicate Adrian Toomes from that universe. They didn't duplicate the Spider-Man. They used the different actors like they did before. I'm not going to accept that.
I don't think that the Sonyverse was thought out as, like, they just didn't think things out. They should have just said, you know what, Marvel, what do you think about, you know, we cut a deal on Venom and all this stuff, but the greed took over, you know, and, you know, it's like, but they should have just said, you know what, man, you know, use these two and let's split the profits or whatever. And
I'm being harsh. I'm being nitpicky as hell here. This stuff does not in any way detract from my enjoyment of the movie, because what they did right was put Peter Parker, Tom Holland's Peter Parker, at the center of all this. Everybody else, you know, like Garfield got a little closure, which was nice. It was a nice moment, but it was not the centerpiece of the movie. The centerpiece of the movie was Peter making a true decision to take responsibility, which means sacrifice.
Yeah.
And sacrificing his happiness to be Spider-Man. Something he hasn't really had to do all this time. And they earned it so well because they've been building it up not just through two other Spider-Man movies, but Avengers movies and stuff like that. Not that he hasn't been through some shit, but he didn't have these personal losses that Tony Stark maybe, but even that. Not like losing Aunt May.
Yeah, right. And he didn't even know.
And his best friend and the love of his life. He's lost it all. And it was all from him saying, one, I'm not going to kill these guys. I'm going to do the right thing. And it was him, you know, screwing this up in the first place, trying to have it all. And that was the realization. That was the arc he came to. Is like, I not only can't have it all, but I have to sacrifice what I have if I'm going to continue to be Spider-Man properly.
And Tobey Maguire is like, now you know how I feel.
Yeah. I think it was more like Tobey Maguire saying, I understand.
Right.
His Spider-Man was there to tell him, I understand.
Yeah. Older brother.
Yeah, he and there was a point where he thought Tom Holland was actually going to kill Norman Osborn, and Maguire stops him. And Maguire has every reason in the world to want to kill him.
Yeah,
that Peter Parker, I should say, but he stops him, and he helps him understand that that's the direction you don't want to go. You'll never, you know, forgive yourself. So he plays that role really nicely. He's kind of subdued. He's just kind of the mentor figure.
Yeah.
Where Garfield had more, he still had problems. And it was neat watching them talk with each other and discuss some of the things that they've had, you know. What's the weirdest villain? He's like, well, Maguire says, well, I did fight an alien once. He's like, oh, yeah, I fought an alien on another planet, big purple one. And Garfield's like, geez, the only thing I fought was a weird Russian in a big rhino robot suit. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. I mean, it felt natural. It didn't feel forced. They were having these moments. And there was tons of Easter eggs everywhere.
I was kind of afraid that they would make one of them into like the slob joke, like the like that animated movie from a couple years ago, the Into the Multiverse, where, you know, the standard
that one didn't bother me. They didn't Skywalker any of these guys.
Yeah, I don't. It didn't bother me, but I did not want to see like either of them become like this. Like, oh, I'm this loser failure, basically. That is You know, I wanted to think Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man went on to like at least get his shit together somewhat.
He did, according to... I mean, it's like, he's still got problems. But, I mean, Spider-Man always has fucking problems. That's the kind of the point, you know?
Yeah, he's a real-life loser. If he didn't, you know,
so that's why it didn't bother me in Into the Spider-Verse that the older Peter Parker was kind of, you know, like
well,
that.
He got, like, and he redeemed... Yeah, and he got some, like,
redemption. And he got redemption, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like Luke Skywalker. That's the worst. You know, you didn't want to see him go that way. Neither of them were treated that way. This thing made $253 million in the box office, is what I'm hearing. I'm like, oh, God, dang. I mean, I wonder what, because there's zero wokeness in this. This is true storytelling about characters you want to see do well. There's tons of redemption. There's tons of people making mistakes, but none of it has to do with, you know, dumb political stuff. It is old-fashioned storytelling like it should be.
It's hard to believe that that did not get sucked, you know, seeped into that at this day and age.
Well,
Sony must have put their foot down or something.
Somebody
or
did. But yeah, I hope that Disney, Sony, and every other damn company wakes up and sees that, no, that stuff doesn't work.
But
people want
you know
to
what,
see
though?
This kind
they
of
won't.
Thing.
They won't. They'll say, this movie made $1.5 billion. It would have made $2.5 billion if we had made the Tobey Maguire character gay and we'd use Miles Morales to, you know what I mean?
I can't, but I hope they're not that stupid.
Yeah.
I don't think the suits are that stupid. Because you can't look at all the woke stuff that you put out there and watch it continually fail for the most part. And then see this come out. Because we're not just talking, here's the thing. It's not just that it beat Force Awakens and is up there with Avengers Endgame and Avengers Infinity War as far as opening weekends. That's one thing. That would be impressive just in general, right? But we're talking about post-pandemic. There hasn't been a movie since the pandemic that's broken 100 million on a weekend.
You know what? You're right. And once I thought about it, you're right. Because they, you know, the Marvel cinematic guys, they know better because all of those movies leading up to the end, you know, basically the real end, they kept that out of it. Because they knew they and the comic books had went woke years before, but they knew to keep that out of the movies. They knew that would not work in the movies. They were not going to make.
Well, they tried. They stuck it in Captain Marvel.
Well, now though, you know,
they've done and it's eaten away at it. Eternals.
But you know, they knew for a long time not to do it. Is my point, right? Like they knew because Captain America and all that, they were the classic. Pretty much the classic versions of themselves, and the comics had been woke for years at this point already. But they didn't say like, oh, we're going to make, you know, Iceman gay, you know, like they did. So they knew that wouldn't go over. So they know, you know,
they know, but that doesn't explain why they've been doing it. So somebody's come in and tried it. They tried some woke movies. The woke movies haven't worked. Then they do this one, which is clearly not. Which is clearly trying to tell an actual story, which is treating all the characters with respect, and you blow away box office records post-pandemic. I didn't think I'd ever see a $200 million movie ever again. Ever.
Yeah, same here.
I mean, seriously, at least a $200 million weekend. At least not for another decade or so.
Right.
Not until all this shit was passed. So to see this happen like this,
well, that,
I mean,
this
New York and L.A. are still locked down to shit.
Yeah, they're going to lock them down again even.
Like, yeah. So even with all that, I mean, $253 million. That is face melting. I mean, I don't think anybody. If you don't realize how big a number that is, considering the circumstances that are going around right now, and considering how difficult it is in some places to still get into the theater, if you don't realize how big the number that is. That I'm telling you, there are suits over there that have got a bucket of cold water in their face from that number. Mm. That it was wholly unexpected to do that well.
Is that just the U.S. box office?
That's
that
just right? The U.S. box office.
This thing's going to be a monster.
In the post-pandemic, where people have kind of turned their nose up at Marvel for the last few movies. Shang-Chi didn't do very well. It did okay. The Eternals. Is damn near a bomb, and it wasn't very good. Black Widow was crap, and people are not, you know. I mean, the series have been mostly miss, with a few minor. Hawkeye is very good, but other than that, the rest of them have been. Loki was middling at best, and the other two, like I really liked WandaVision until it completely shit the bed.
Yeah. And I liked Loki until he became like a laughing stock. You know,
he became a little bit of a, yeah, it didn't do as well as it should. And then Falcon and Winter Soldier was just not good at all. So, I mean, it wasn't like the MCU was just printing gold anymore like it had been. And they'd already finished their Endgame, right?
Yeah.
People kind of moved aside. The Spider-Man movies did okay, but they weren't killing it at the box office like you would expect, like Spider-Man movies had done in the past. So the way this thing opened, the way it worked out, given all the circumstances, I'm telling you, this is an earthquake as far as the movie industry sees it. And it's going to wake more people. I hope it should. If they have a brain in their fucking heads, this should wake them up more than anything else that they've seen so far, because this is not woke. This is very, very good storytelling. Certainly, it was doing things that you would never expect it. And to be able to see Toby and Andrew and all that and see these old, you know, there was a nostalgia thing. I'll give it that.
Yeah.
But even with all that, I didn't. Look at Ghostbusters. It didn't light it up. And yeah, we knew we were going to get the old Ghostbusters back. But it wasn't that great. And even if, you know, it was review proof, it's still, I don't think it broke 100 million the first weekend. Maybe.
Yeah.
Just.
I don't know. Yeah.
It didn't do as well as I would have expected. And I was just, you could have knocked me over with a feather when I saw that number. I was shocked.
Yeah, it was a, because I, you know, I was on the fence about going and seeing it. I was kind of waiting on what you and a couple of the other guys thought about it before I, you know, decided to actually drive to a theater and see it. But the lure of, you know, the other two guys coming back in is very, because I swore, it's appealing. Off, you know,
yeah.
I swore, I was like, after Endgame, I was like, that's it, it's over. You know, you can see on the horizon the wokeness has already started to come in, you know, and I was like, no more. You know, it's a perfect ending. And then, but that, you know, I was like, ooh, man, they really, they smell a sucker when they, you know, they know a sucker when they see one. And
yeah, no, you know, doubt. I mean, there was, you know, I was worried about that. Was this going to be a cheap cash grab where they just bring them in? Garfield, McGuire did a good job. He played it more subdued and what you might expect his character to be like at 37, I think he's supposed to be, or something like that. Garfield clearly was relishing the moment to redeem that character, a character I guess he really loved and really wanted to play.
Yeah, he was famously excited about being Spider-Man.
It's got to be nice for him to be able to talk about it
again. Yeah, now.
Because he was getting peppered with all, he kept saying, I'm not in it. I'm not, just lying.
Yeah.
Just lying his fucking ass off.
Lied his
good for him, too. He just gave it to the face. I'm not in it. He was very bold about, I'm not in it. He wasn't like, no, yeah, I'm not in it. He wasn't playing around. He's like, I'm not in it. I'll punch you in the face if you say I'm in it.
And nobody could find Tobey Maguire to ask him.
Tobey Maguire was like, I'm out. I'm in Alaska.
He's falling off. Yeah, it's like, whatever. I was like, what?
His last on-screen appearance was like, I think it was The Great Gatsby, 2014.
Oh, shit, I've already forgot about that movie.
Yeah.
What an impact it had, huh?
Yeah. I think...
And I like him as an actor, you know?
Yeah, he's all right. I think he just kind of stepped away from it all, though.
Well, I think, like, the prostitutes and gambling got more attractive to him than... And that's fine. If I had Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3 money, I'd probably blow my time in, you know, Las Vegas, too.
If you could spend the rest of your life just with beer and hookers, I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, I don't, you know, no judgment from me. No,
not at all. He did his thing. Yeah.
He put in his time.
I guess he had a little bit of debts because he came back for this. I'm sure they backed up a dump truck full of money for both of them to come in.
You know what? I'd love to hear what Sam Raimi would have to say about this movie, just to, you know,
because
he was
funny. You should say that, because the final post credit scene is basically a trailer for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, who is directed by Sam Raimi.
Hmm. Yeah, that's another one. They know how to tempt me on that.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I'm thinking a Doctor Strange movie, which is, you know, bonkers enough as it is, and the multiverse, which they've just started tapping into, and you're going to have it directed by Sam Raimi? Now, man.
Yeah, I totally can't say no to that one. I wonder if Raimi had a little bit of a, you know, I won't say writing, uncredited writing, but I wonder if his advice on that was sought out.
I'm sure he did, because I know that James Gunn helped with some of the Guardian scenes in Infinity War.
Yeah.
And I there's such a collaboration for all this stuff. I mean, Feige, you got to give him credit. He's got this stuff going like a well-oiled machine, and he knows where to get, you know. They're not just cross-pollinating the characters into different, they're cross-pollinating the behind-the-scenes people.
Yeah, you know, that was the interesting thing about that is that that when director of One Night in Soho, Christ, what's his name? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, Edgar Wright.
So when he left the Ant-Man thing, it was like, no, I wanted full control, and they kept saying, you've got to do this because we've got this bigger thing going on, and, you know, he didn't like that at all. And I thought, well, you know, man, when you stepped into that, he should have known that was like you're a cog in a machine.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I think there is. Remember, that was 2015 when Ant-Man came out, so I think you were a little bit more constrained back then, and they were still dipping their toes into weird. Like, James Gunn was their first real attempt. Because, you know, when I look at Phase One, those movies are pretty quaint.
Yeah.
Now, and even the first Avengers, I'll tell you, I don't think the first Avengers holds up nearly as well as Age of Ultron. Weirdly enough.
Really, what about it is not? I got to know what about it falls flat for you.
It's not that it falls flat. It's just, I don't know, some of the way the characters act and some of the. It feels like a movie that's still trying to figure out its footing and its voice in some things. And some things, I don't know, some of it's Joss Whedonisms and stuff like that. But Age of Ultron feels a little bit more settled into the universe. And they seem to understand what they're trying to do. Whereas they didn't even know if that one first one was going to work right, you know?
Yeah.
Thanos, he just wants to take over the world at that point, right?
Yeah, right, yeah.
Because
yeah,
these unruly humans, he wants to just take over, and there was nothing about Infinity Stones or anything there, so they didn't have everything mapped out. There's something that just feels like they're trying to figure things out in that movie, and some of that stuff just doesn't feel as natural in the universe now that I've seen another 2,300 movies since then.
Yeah. 31 De Niro wants to know if we're going to talk about anything other than Spider-Man movies, so he can go if we are, I guess. Well, we're talking about...
is an MCU hour. I really wanted to talk about Spider-Man and how good... How the MCU has gotten me excited again. Literally. And I'm really looking forward to this. Because the trailer for the Multiverse of Madness kind of alluded to the fact that the reason why we're having the Multiverse of Madness and all this shit is because Strange pulled these shenanigans, right? But they also, in the trailer, they show the evil Doctor Strange, which I think is from What If, the What If series. I think it's that.
Going on, you mean going on right now, the animated one, or the, yes. Or just a callback to the comic book? Okay.
Yes. So I think that's what's going on there. You know, that's what we're talking about right now.
Yeah,
don't let us keep you, man. I mean, yeah, you know, nobody's put a gun to your head. We're here to for your entertainment.
There's no Alec Baldwin here.
That's right. I'm not going to shoot you in the face.
Hit like at least before you go.
Yeah, a like and subscribe would be wonderful.
Even if you didn't like it.
We're solid. Here to abuse our own audience. That's how much we care.
So the Age of Ultron, I think the only reason I don't like it as much is because it's very heavy on the weight, and, you know, it's like...
I feel like that movie has... Now that you understand a lot more of the context, and the Infinity Stones and all the other stuff. I just feel like that movie works more than it maybe definitely did when you yeah didn't know. I feel like that movie's gotten better over time.
The yeah, it connects to the rest of the universe better, but you know, the dialogue and some of the, you know.
You find out about Barton's family, which is nice.
Yeah, it's true.
I think they really fleshed out Hawkeye in that one. He is
the small character moments are better in than the for sure. But the, you know, I don't know, just the whole.
You don't like the Hulk widow thing. That's what you don't like.
No, it's not. Yeah, that's what it was. I was so jealous.
She's she's like, Hulk out. I want to see that big green schlong of yours.
Yeah. I think it was just at that point I was starting to get tired of giant sky battle with a horde of enemies, you know. It's like that was already starting to.
Yeah, like the ending that was a lot of that, but it had a good one. You lost a guy, Quicksilver, so there was some death in that. Two, I like the moment with Hawkeye and Wanda. Where he's
that was the highlight of the whole movie. Yeah.
The city is flying. The city is flying.
I got a bow
swarming with giant robots, and I got a bow and arrow. None of this makes any sense. Yeah,
that was definitely and I tell you, my other favorite moment of the movie is the where they're at the party, and you know they all try to which had a great payoff at the end game, is where you know you see it barely budge when Cap tries it.
Why do you think he couldn't lift it?
I don't, because he hadn't been through the events of Civil War, and
I have a theory on this, and they've never really explained it in canon. They asked the Russos. He's like, oh, he was just being nice, which I call bullshit. I think. This is my theory, and I think it works. In up through Civil War, there was a couple of things. One was a bit of uncertainty of his place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be worthy if you're uncertain of yourself. And two, he knew about Stark's parents.
And
he lied. He was dishonest.
Yeah.
It was the one thing he was holding back, the one thing he knew he should have done. Once Civil War happened, he did his best to make his peace with Stark. Yeah, and then he came clean as best as he could, you know, with the note and the phone, and says, you have every right to be mad, I get it, but I'll still be there for you if you need me. And second, he went and got his friends and says, I don't give a damn anymore. I'm doing what's right. At that point, he could lift the hammer. He just didn't get a chance until
Endgame. Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's poke holes in it if you like, but that's my theory.
No, I think, I mean, it you know.
It feels like it's well set up for that. I mean, that's a perfect explanation. I wish they would make it canon, because it feels very organic.
My theory was just that, you know, he had to go through those things, which was a broader way of, but I had not thought of it that specifically.
I think it was the dishonesty more than anything.
Yeah, which of course, you know, who even knew that was going to happen at that point in that movie, but you knew when it budged that there was going to be a point in time that we saw him pick up.
Sure. They kind of put a little setup because he was that close. He was that close to being worthy.
And you even see, I love the look of
Thor's like, oh, panic shit.
Yeah.
He's not even Asgardian. And he has picked it up in the comics, you know, and things like that, because he is a such a moral paragon, all that. And I think that, you know, there was something holding him back. He was a man out of time and all that. He wasn't quite as sure as himself. And he was holding back from Tony, which he knew he shouldn't be doing. And once that got all cleared up and he made his peace and he made his decisions, then he could pick up the hammer. And I feel like that was the... I wish they had kind of... Because it was right there. To me, it's like it's all right there. You've already laid it out brilliantly. Just make it happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of pisses me off that the Russos even like was that glib about it. Oh, he was just being nice. No, come on, you're better writers than that.
I think that's
a throwaway line, you know.
Well, they were being asked like on the red carpet. They just got done putting together this $750 billion movie that took, you know, 8 years, and they had to, you know.
That's no excuse.
Herd cats for like the last 7 months.
That's not good enough for me.
Jesus, man, you're tough.
I want perfection.
You're not going to shoot me in the face, are you?
No, not right now.
I'm not going to get Alec Baldwin on this shit.
Not on camera.
So, I honestly think it may be the best Spider-Man movie.
I would say that without seeing it, and just based on your description, that's
so I honestly even think it is because it's not just it does so much. It does so much right as far as setup, payoff, making sure that Holland is the center, but then giving the other two Spider-Men, if not closure, at least a little bow on top. Mm-hmm. I think Garfield got some closure, and McGuire, we got a little bow on top, which is nice.
Yeah.
And they didn't make them front and center. It was not their movie. Right. But they treat them with respect, and you felt like now you feel like it's a saga, right? Right. Like you got these, what is it, 6-8 freaking Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, it almost feels like it was its own little mini, Endgame or something.
Yeah, it becomes a big epic. And
it's like the Avengers of Spider-Man or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if they figure out a way to bring Spider-Verse into this, my brain's going to crack
in half. Oh, no doubt. They're looking at that money right now going, hey, do we still have these guys' phone numbers? Or who else can we bring in here?
Yeah, a guy asked me today, he's like, got Matt Murdock in this, He's like, I wonder if they'll bring in any of the other Netflix characters. I says, as long as money, yes. that's all it takes, money.
Didn't you say that Wilson Fisk is in the Hawkeye?
He is.
So clearly they're...
They're trying to draw them in. I would love to see Jessica Jones and some of them in the MCU proper. The problem with those Netflix series, they were so dour.
Yeah.
And they were so separate. They were MCU in name only.
Yeah, we're not going to see Frank Castle on the big screen in the MCU,
Maybe we might. I mean, could, but
maybe for a cameo, like.
Yeah.
Matt, maybe.
I don't think it's impossible, but you gotta do it a little differently than what you did. But I don't know. I don't know.
Well, if they really are going to bring Deadpool into the MCU, then anything's possible, because Deadpool's as violent as the Punisher,
That's true.
And they say it's going to be rated R. They claim that they're going to keep it rated R still, right? Haven't they said, worry.
The Deadpool was part of the X-Men universe, and I have a feeling that that's going to be a prelude or a prologue to them bringing the new X-Men into the MCU. This shit's going to go on for 30 years, man.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's making money at least, right? So what are you looking forward to most to seeing the X-Men into the MCU or the Fantastic Four? Me personally,
X-Men.
I'd rather see the Fantastic Four, because they're more of a fit to the current MCU and the way everything's based in that. I think they're a more
I feel like the Fantastic Four are overrated as hell.
No, I don't like the Fantastic Four.
Well, okay.
No. Yeah, I don't like them, but
you'd rather have the ones you don't like than the ones you kind of do.
No, I didn't say it was my preference.
You are blowing my brain right now.
Okay, let me rephrase that. They're not my favorite and they're not my preference, but I think their story is more easy to get into the MCU without a weird, there's mutants suddenly,
I'm sure they can. I wouldn't be surprised if they take over Stark Tower and make like the Baxter Building or something like that, but I don't know. I the Fantastic Four, like, everybody has this reverence for the Fantastic Four because they were kind of the birth of the Marvel Universe, and I'll give them that. They were different. Everybody liked them, but they were far surpassed by the other
You don't want to characters. See Herbie? You don't want to see Herbie.
I do want to see Herbie. I absolutely want to see Herbie. Don't bring in the Human Torch. It would be really crazy if they brought Chris Evans in to play Human Torch again.
Now that would be cool.
And he meets Captain America. They're like, and then do the Spider-Man pointing thing for an hour.
So how do you think they will? Because I kind of thought the multiverse of madness. I've thought like, well, that however they're going to do it, that would be a way to. Bring in the X-Men somehow.
I'm very confused because okay, so you've got the multiverse that Strange is screwing with, but you also got Loki and the whole time variances, which is apparently creating the multiverse. But was the multiverse already there? Because clearly these villains and Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield were much before the Loki thing that's going on now, but then we're talking about time and variation, so who the hell knows?
I'm trying to
understand if the Kang thing that they're doing.
That's racist. You shouldn't say that.
Kang?
Yeah.
He's black. It's okay.
Oh, I forgot. What?
He's a black guy with an Asian name. It's fine. Kubla Kang. So, Kunta Kang.
Disavow.
Your name's Toby. No, I'm making the multiverse. Leave me alone. Tobey Maguire. No, I've gone off the. I haven't even had anything to drink tonight.
I read some years ago that the guy that wrote Roots and claimed that was admitted he made it all up, the whole thing, like none of it. He didn't really research his, all the way back to
really. Days.
Yeah, he's like, it was all made up.
I'll tell you, man, 1977, he pretty much made an entire nation go, God, we're sorry. we suck. We're sorry. We'll work through this, okay? We'll figure this out.
Yeah, it did more probably harm than good, too, though.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. It's a great series. It's a great miniseries. I'll give it that.
Yeah, for like, just a story and drama of it, yeah. But
I just wish it had more Spider-Man in it, but that's
he's watching. He's like, okay, Toby, but where's Spider-Man?
Yeah, exactly.
When is he gonna put on the suit?
Or I guess it was
sucks.
LeVar Burton. Yeah, put on the visor. See if you can see this thing coming before he whips you.
Reading Rainbow, of course. When I was like, what are they doing to LeVar, man?
W is for whip. Have we got shut down yet?
We're canceled for sure.
we're gonna get canceled badly. No, I what was I talking about? I was talking about.
We were talking about how you think the X-Men are going to get introduced into the MCU.
The whole multiverse thing. I don't know if it's. I'm confused on whether it's the time variant thing with Kang, or if it's Doctor Strange screwing with the multiverse, or if those two are going to mesh together. I'm guessing there's some kind of plan here, but I'm a little confused on how all this.
Because I've always wondered, if they just say out of nowhere, oh, one day mutants exist, you could do that theoretically. You could just say, oh yeah, they were here all this time and we're hiding because,
Well, Wanda in the House of M said no more mutants, and they all went away except for just a small few. And she's in the Multiverse of Madness, and we know she's not exactly firing on all cylinders right now, thanks to all the loss she's had in her life. So maybe she does something that starts creating mutants.
I don't know.
Reverse House of M? The mobile home of M?
They draw so heavy on some big events in the past 10, 15 years that, it's hard to not draw, some of these connections and go, well, they did this. It's just like this movie, you think it's got One More Day written all over it. And it kind of
It certainly has the it certainly has some inspiration. That's one thing I've kind of liked about the MCU is that they've tended to bring in echoes of storylines but still keeping it its own thing.
Yeah, I always thought it was kind of neat that it. One thing that I did like about it early on was that how close it echoed Mark Millar's The Ultimates, which was clearly heavily influenced the MCU.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they I don't know if you, but I guess they got permission from Sam Jackson when they created their Nick Fury in the Ultimate Universe to use his likeness.
Yeah, who knew? So
then it came full circle, you know, with him playing Nick Fury. I'm like,
speaking of the Ultimate Universe, how did you like the Bendis Ultimate Spider-Man?
I loved it. Yeah, I liked very little else in the Ultimate Universe, but I did love the Spider-Man stuff.
That was me. I liked that the best, and I liked the first two 12-issue miniseries of the Ultimates. After that, the rest of them.
Yeah, the X-Men wasn't too bad either, but it was hit or miss.
Yeah, I didn't like
the rest of it. Like, I didn't like the Ultimates. I thought they made Captain America into too much of a jackass.
It's pretty mean-spirited take on
Captain America. Yeah, it's a really, really awful take on Captain America. And
he's a prick in it.
And I think they had... Is that the one where they had Hank Pym just beat the living piss out of the Wasp?
Yeah,
a full-on... Like, in the original 616 universe, I think he accidentally slapped her once and was, like, sorry about it forever.
Yeah, he was, like, pointing at something and accidentally...
Yeah,
you know,
and it was like a big deal or something, and like in the Ultimate Universe, he's just got her head right in the silverware drawer, just banging away.
Yeah, you know, like at one point she shrinks down to her bug size, and he sprays her with Ray. That's how serious the fight gets. Yeah,
I wish that was a joke.
No, that's absolutely something happened.
It was so sick.
I did like the ultimate take on Hawkeye though. Like, he's a legit government killer in that.
Yeah,
and I think that's fine.
And the Nick Fury stuff. It was the Spider-Man stuff they handled the best.
Yeah,
they kind of distilled everything about at that time 40 years worth of Spider-Man,
right?
And pulled it together into a very coherent story. It was much more believable of him being in the high school. I loved the dialogue that they had. It felt
Bendis's best work.
It was, and what was great is that they kept the same artist, Bagley, for almost all of it.
Oh yeah,
and that so the combination of the two, it really worked.
I did really like it. What was I going to say?
I liked May better in there.
I did too. Yeah.
I liked
Mary Jane better in it.
All of it.
I thought the Gwen Stacy in that was a pretty unique take.
Yeah, I didn't like
that she became Carnage. That was kind of hokey.
Carnage or clone Stace, whatever the hell they did with her. I can't remember. Did she finally become human again? Did they fix her?
Yeah, they fixed her somehow. Like
something like that. And that storyline was a little
pretty hokey. Yeah, it was not his best work, that's for sure.
But like, I love the Dr. Octopus in that one. I think that he was great. And the Green Goblin was interesting. More of a Hulk kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that take. I think that made more sense.
Yeah. I mean, the original Green Goblin is pretty hokey.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks like, you know, hey, here's me pots of gold or something.
You know, I still have a soft spot for Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
I do too.
I still love that, man.
Hey, man, they drew Firestar hot.
Oh, I think that Firestar probably put me into puberty early. She's got that yellow skin tight bodysuit.
I know.
And now we know.
I'm not proud of that. Man
never hit on her. He's gay all the time, and he didn't even know it.
Iceman and Firestar, they just wouldn't have worked, would they?
No.
You're melting my dick.
Icarus in the sun, you know.
That's right. It's melted off. It fell off.
Yeah, I love that. I unapologetically love that. I wish it kept.
It was okay. The one thing that was weird is that, like, he pulled the, like, he had the bat computers in his apartment. I'm like, how the hell did he afford all that shit?
Flips over.
Yeah.
In Aunt May's back of her house or something.
Yeah.
Living like a side building or something.
They did pull in the X-Men in that one once. Yep. I think they had some
Wolverine good... inexplicably had an Australian.
That's right. He was a complete Aussie. I'm like,
yes.
He's Canadian, you morons. At least make him say a boot.
I guess they thought that was the same thing.
Yeah. That was weird.
There was some good stuff in it though.
Yeah, it was alright. You watch it on HBO Max right now. You're not getting paid for that.
Nostalgia goggles or something maybe affect me too much for it.
I watched a bit of it, and I was like, don't watch the shit you loved when you were a kid.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't ever.
Yeah, it's like they always say, you know, don't meet your heroes.
Yeah.
And I've had occasion to meet three people, you know, that I really admired, and so far that advice turned out to be wrong. One is somebody that you never heard of, but a couple summers ago they had a comic book convention in Pikeville, which is just 20 miles away, and Mike Baron was there, and so was Jim Shooter, and all the stuff, you know, you hear about Jim Shooter, class act, man, great guy. He talked to me for an hour or better and showed me photos he had. Like, he brought all these photos of his entire time at Marvel and stuff, like notes that Stan Lee had wrote him. And he explained to me one of the things I asked him. I was like, why? Because he started talking about the G.I. Joe cartoon and Transformers cartoon compared to the comic books. And I said, why did the stories... And I think I told you this already once before, but he said, well, the TV show producers, they come, you know, they wanted help, but they said, oh, comic book writers aren't real writers. We're not interested in any of your ideals. And so they just absolutely didn't want...
Let's see. Yeah, hey, want to check the box office of Spider-Man again? Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess they are.
Yeah, but he said they thought they were, like, beneath them, you know. Even though Larry Hama basically wrote all the, you know, the backstory on all the G.I. Joes.
Mike
Baron was awesome too.
I can't say I really met him, but it was in like 96 or 97, and I went to a Star Trek convention. Now, I don't normally go to conventions, and because live here in Kansas City, so you know the guests that they get is like, you know, this was the guy that played Armus the Tar Monster. Or, you know, she was in 5 minutes of Star Trek where she was turned into a cube and then crushed. You know, those are the guests we get. But that year, we got William Shatner.
No kidding.
And I was like, okay.
Did he ask if you'd ever kissed a girl or anything?
No, I didn't talk to him in person, unfortunately. But I did watch and see his, his presentation, whatever.
You didn't get an autograph or nothing, a picture with him?
It was very difficult, and he was he appeared and he disappeared. But while he was there, I gotta tell you, that guy has probably done I don't know how many Star Trek conventions at that point. And if you didn't know any better, you would think this was his first. He was energetic. He was there longer than he had to be. He told stories I had never heard before, and I felt like I had heard all the Star Trek stories. He brought some woman on stage, and she just about peed her pants. She was so happy. He didn't have to do any of this stuff, you know?
Right.
And like I said, I mean, the energy that he put forth on that stage. He wasn't like, yeah, I'm here. He wasn't like like when he was on SNL.
Yeah, right.
You know, they're asking him questions. He's like, I don't fucking, you know, you're taking this show I did as a lark. You turned it into a colossal waste of time. No.
Best skit that Saturday Night Live has ever had. It was great. Too, by the way.
But when he's actually at a convention, he clearly is appreciative and loves his fans and puts on a show to let you know that he loves being there. He wants you to have fun. And he's doing his best in this venue to do that. And he was telling all kinds of fun stories and just went on and on well past his time. And it was as energetic, as lively as I wouldn't have guessed it. And you know, at night by 96, 97, that's 30 years. You know, he'd been doing a ton of those. You know, he's probably sick of the whole Star Trek thing. And yet, I wouldn't have known it for shit. He put in all kinds of effort. So kudos to you, Bill. I still remember that. If you ever see this, I thought it was wonderful, and I appreciate the effort.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I don't know. You kind of hear mixed things about him, but I've never heard anybody actually say anything fan-wise. Say like,
I think people are mixed about him now because he's 90, he's on Twitter, and he doesn't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah.
What are you going to do to him? How are you going to cancel William Shatner at this point?
Yeah, yeah.
He just tears into all the wokies all he wants, or anybody he considers stupid, which there's a lot of them that said some really stupid things, and he just calls them on it. He doesn't pick fights. He's not mean, But people are always adding him, and so he just shreds them and moves on. And it's quite hilarious, and I love every minute of it. His Twitter is one of the more entertaining things you'll ever read, especially if he gets going on somebody. It's chef's kiss. There you go.
I try to stay off of there. I'm way too spicy for Twitter. I wouldn't make it 24 hours before
I
get.
I can't. It's a sewer. But
yeah,
there are bright spots, and he's one of them. So anyway, that is my giant talk about Spider-Man. I went, God, I've been just yammering on here for $1.40. Why didn't you stop me, man? What's wrong with you?
I was having a good time. I don't have a life. You know?
Apparently not.
Go back into this yellow dog that barks at me all day.
We keep going. We're going to be pushing Midnight's Edge level of inane banter, aren't we?
I saw, I forgot what it was, a live stream a couple weeks ago. They went for 9 hours. I was
like, Jesus Christ.
It's like,
I need to eat and sleep.
I don't want to hear myself talk for 9 hours.
No, this is a word vomit. I get it all out in these things, and I'm quiet for the rest of the week. You know,
this is good. You know, we can do this on a nighttime if you want to. I'm good for it. Mostly.
Yeah, I like to do the weekend ones because I want to get UK guys in here.
If you want to do an extra one.
Let the viewers decide. Would you like to see more of these nighttime ones in addition to our Sunday live stream? We'll be happy to do it. You let us know by hitting that like button. Hit it. And
what are we talking about this Sunday? I know
The Matrix.
I thought we were going to try to redo from the abortive failure last week.
Yes, but then I'll be on, and I always take over without a thought to anybody else's feelings about the matter. I just start yammering on, and you guys are just going to get dragged along with me, whether you want to or not.
I think I was thinking to propose that at least before too long, before either the new year or shortly after, we should do at least have a little time to do worst of the year. That's always fun, you know.
The worst of the year.
To complain. Yeah, like the word that your biggest disappointments are the
I don't have that kind of time. Do you know how long that show will go?
Well, you know, you got your top five or top three or something.
You want me to narrow it down? Are you out of your mind? There's so much bad to gleefully shred. I don't understand your logic here. It's escaping me. I'm getting punchy.
It was just a thought. I don't know.
Well, you keep your thoughts. Have you? This is my show, buddy.
I'm sorry. I forgot that I'm just a sidekick.
That's right. You go sideshow Bob. You're going to try to murder me later. Walking on rakes.
Do you have any plans to see that Louis C.K.'s new special that he just put up, or you can stream it for like $10? Watch it. His new comedy special. He's back from being canceled.
I did not know that he had one.
Yeah, on his website, lewisck.com, you can, he's got a new special up. You can PayPal and watch it for 10.
Maybe. I'm not as.
Bucks or buy it for. I'm curious. It's called I'm Sorry. So.
Yeah, I'm, you know, it's either. First of all, I was never that big a fan of Louis C.K. in the first place. He's good. He makes me laugh, but yeah, I was not. He's no Bill Burr. But. He'll either go way too far, or it's going to be a weepy, woke nonsense that won't be funny at all.
Reports so far say that it is not a weepy woke.
Okay.
No.
I don't want to say anti.
I haven't seen it myself. I'm just saying that's what reports are saying that it's.
I just
not.
Want it to be funny. If it's funny, I'll give it a try. But yeah. I see too much. I don't know. There's a lot of bad stuff out there. So I'm waiting for Bill Burr to put out a new special. Even Chappelle, his last special, like I don't know if you saw it or not. His one before then was extraordinarily funny. I mean, just little pee coming out of you funny.
Yeah.
his last one was more, he called it his last one or whatever he called it.
The closer, I think.
The closer, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, it wasn't like it didn't have some funny moments in it, but there was a lot more serious talk about things and a lot of, and nothing that I really disagreed with him on, or nothing that, even if I disagreed with him on it, I felt like it was, he was talking in good faith and not just saying a bunch of nonsense. But it just, it wasn't that funny.
Yeah. But I didn't, the one.
That was the problem. I mean, I want to laugh when I watch Dave Chappelle.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. The one I thought was funniest was the one where he made the Juicy Smollett joke.
The Juicy Smollett, yes. That was the one right after that.
Yeah, the one after that, I thought where he was like on some little stage in his backyard. I didn't think that was funny.
No, I mean, he got.
I haven't seen the newest one either.
And I, you know, I'm not really blaming him so much. I think he's trying to stay ahead of these things and trying to say his own stuff. But I think it's grating on his sense of humor. I think he's a little angry about some of this stuff.
The same thing that happened to George Carlin at the end is happening to him. He's becoming too bitter. You know,
The criticism and the ridiculous hiss heaped on him. I don't blame him for being angry.
No, I don't either.
He's got every right to be angry. But in the end, you're putting out a show for comedy. Am I laughing? That's not as much as I hoped.
Yeah, I don't tune in to get
and the Juicy Smollett. Yeah, that one right before then, it was flat out hilarious. Yeah. I loved him saying he wants to identify as Chinese. I identify as Chinese.
Yeah.
It's like, that's offensive, but this is how I feel inside.
Yeah.
It's like, and everybody was so angry at him. I'm like, that is great. What are you talking about?
That's the difference, though. You know, he made it funny, but later on it got to be, it was just like a, I don't want to say a lecture, but it come very close to some, I don't know, a little bit of.
Yeah. It was just, it just was a little too self-serious. That's all. And it wasn't that there wasn't funny moments in it. There was. It's not Hannah Gatsby's levels of garbage, but you know.
Yeah.
But it is. There is something seeping in there where he is just fed up.
Yeah.
Rightly so. And I understand it, but that doesn't make some of this funny.
Right.
Understandable.
I mean,
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's and if this is the last one he does, you know, he sits back, he calms down for a couple of years, and then decides to come back to the circuit and do something new. You know, maybe he'll find that again, you know, when all of this isn't so fresh. So, we'll see. But I loved his show. Did you watch his show?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, he took a, 20-year break or something. It felt like it anyway.
Yeah,
the Chappelle Show.
Yeah.
I watched some of them, but at the time I wasn't that big of a fan.
I loved when he had Wayne Brady. Wayne Brady is that very inoffensive comic that did Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah.
And so he's driving along the streets of L.A. with Dave, and it's like, you know, hey, Black comedians, we're brothers, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And they stop someplace, and he pulls out a gun, he starts just shooting the guy, go, left side, motherfucker! And Dave's like, what the hell? And then later on, he pulls over and starts collecting money from a bunch of whores. Apparently, he's a pimp. And one lady's a little short. He's like, what did he say? Is Wayne Brady going to have to stab a bitch or something like that? I mean, it was really crass and horrible, and Chappelle's in the car going just frightened out of his mind at this point. He realizes he's with a complete psychopath. Brady was a good sport for doing it. It was really funny.
I don't know what happened, but we just froze up on the stream and buffered for like 2 or 3 seconds there. It's clear now, but
is that on Skype or is it this? Is it because it still says excellent?
No, it's on YouTube. No, it's on the. I was watching it on another computer on the YouTube, and it buffered and stopped for a minute or two. But we're clear. It's good now, but I don't know what happened there.
I don't know. Oh, well.
I guess
YouTube. Maybe YouTube is saying, get out.
Yeah.
Get out, you weirdos.
The algorithm called up to you.
The algorithm wants you gone. I will buffer the crap out of you if you don't get off. Joke. I understand.
Well, that made it 2 hours.
Yeah, we've done enough. So thank you very much for all of you that watched through this nonsense. And again, if you want to see us do more of this in the evenings and want to be a part of it, hit that like button, subscribe, and share these things out. The more you do, the better we'll do on the YouTube algorithms. And obviously, don't forget, come to lastmovieoutpost.com. We have all the cool news now. So every day you'll find some new news story. We are working hard for you.
And we even sometimes talk about movies.
Sometimes. We did pretty good this time. We talked. I was gushing about Spider-Man, I'll admit it.
Yeah, I think. You sold me on it, so.
Yeah. I was very, very impressed. And I don't. You know me. I mean, I get pretty irritated at a lot of these movies. So, I mean, it's. Hey, Disney, I didn't think you had it in you. So, yeah. There you go.
Hopefully it wasn't one last hurrah before the end.
You know, I am worried about that. Is this the last gasp of the great MCU? Which would be a good one to go out on, and the rest of it's just going to be garbage from here on out. I don't know. I mean, you know, you have ebbs and flows, and sometimes you make, you know, they could come back. There's if they continue to make stories like this, they can do it. But
anything's possible in clown world now, so.
Yeah, yeah, unfortunately.
Who knows? You know, we might have some great stuff and, you know, take what we can get, I guess.
I hear you.
Isn't that some battered wife?
Yeah.
Take what we can get.
Weren't we already making jokes about heads getting slammed in silverware drawers? We probably have done our quota of domestic violence jokes today. There's nothing funny about that. Well, I beg to differ.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, tell me what woman says that, and I'll go bash her.
And with that, we will close out for the night. Thank you all for watching, and we will see you on the next stream.